Welcome to the Jam Broberg Show, where we expose the truth about child sexual abuse, rape, assault, and trauma. Everything you hear on this show is for informational and educational purposes only. We do not dispense therapy or give legal advice. This show is not for children.
The views expressed by our guests are solely their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Jam Broberg Show or the Jam Broberg Foundation.
I'm Jam Broberg. Let's get started.
Well, I am very excited today to have Kati from, or Kati, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Kati?
Yeah, Kati.
Kati.
Yeah.
Who is originally from Venezuela with us. Welcome, Kati, to our show today.
Thank you for having me here. I'm so excited. I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm really grateful for being here.
Well, I am grateful that you are not only bravely and courageously sharing your story, but you are also pursuing a career. You're at university studying how to be an orator, how to be able to give those speeches that can change the world. And that's something that I aspire to do as well, to try and start the conversations that nobody seems to be having. Well, maybe they are, but not enough about child abuse.
Yeah, not enough.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're a volunteer at the Victim Service Center in Florida.
Yes.
That's where you live now, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. And got a scholarship to study oratory, preparing yourself to be a motivational speaker. And I really think that's admirable when we take our experiences that we have lived through and they have hurt. And we've had to do something, a lot of things, to get to the point of being able to advocate and support others in their journey, because we're still healing too. We are on that path. And you can do a lot of healing, and I think you can make huge strides, but I still believe that it's ongoing, because something new will come up in your life, you know?
Yeah.
Things will happen, and now again, something has triggered, and there's more, more to process.
Yeah, there's a lot of process.
There is. So, in your process, Kati, I want to know if you, at this age, because you're quite young, when you have gone through sexual violence and you were quite young, how do you hope that what you say today will change people? How do you hope it will impact them?
I hope like they start to hear and to talk more about it on a transparent way with their kids mostly. Because if we educate them without being so, because I know it's a really hard thing to talk about for kids, but like to start doing it in a good way.
With a parent that is calm, that can listen with empathy and understanding and not react in a way that scares the child or that makes the child think, oh, I won't talk about that again because it upset my mom or my dad so much.
Yes.
Or they said something like, I'm going to kill him or, you know, whatever. Those are the things that shut a child down. The things that open a child up is when you can listen and, you know, maybe repeat back what they're saying, but be calm and be concerned and tell them they're going to be safe and you're going to help them. And then the next most important step is for that parent to get a professional involved.
Yeah. So they can feel comfortable, like, talking about it. Or even if they know, like, something, like, it can be wrong, like they can tell them to their dad. Like, don't say like freeze. Cause I know, well, in my case, when it was happening, like I didn't know what was happening, but I knew like something inside me felt weird, felt like so uncomfortable, but I didn't say anything cause I thought it was like normal cause I never heard something about abuse. So I was very confused.
So that's another really good point, is that a lot of times, because we don't talk about our bodies and we don't give the child the terminology, the understanding that they're in charge of this and that these things are not for someone else to do to them. They are private and special, and we need to have that conversation at a very young age. So I know that that's a really good point. And when you said, when you first contacted me, that you had watched a trailer that you had seen of a friend of the family, and then you went and watched the documentary on Netflix.
Documentary, yeah.
And what did that do for you to watch or hear from someone else's story?
Okay, because I know it might sound weird, but I really like to hear other stories and also like watch documentaries, podcasts that talk about this exactly theme, like abuse or any type of sexual abuse. Because I know it sounds weird because people might say like, but why? Doesn't that remember? Like, doesn't
remind
take you back? Yeah, remind you of what happened to you? And yes, of course it doesn't. It's a hard thing to do, but actually it, in my case, it has helped me to accept what happened to me and that I'm not crazy. That some things that sometimes I think, in the case of your documentary, when you say certain things, I was like, oh my God, I get her. Like, she gets me. Even though we have different stories, I totally understand what she's saying. So that really helps me, like, to accept it and to keep healing. Like, I know I'm not alone.
Isn't that a great feeling to know that you're not alone?
Yeah, it is.
And really, to have another peer, I'm just one of your peers that understands because we've both been through it. And even though stories can vary a little bit here and there, the crux of most abuse stories is being isolated, groomed, told that this is okay. They make up a story. It's the elements are still the same.
Yeah.
Stories, no matter, you know, how radical they seem or how quiet behind closed doors they seem. And so the effect on the person is also similar. It still is confusing. You feel like you don't know what to do. You didn't know at the time that I didn't know I was being brainwashed. A brainwashed person doesn't know they're brainwashed. You didn't know that this was not okay, even though you didn't like it. So let's talk a little bit about what happened to you, if you don't mind. You tell me whatever you're comfortable with. But because you were also, it was a neighbor, a friend of the family. It was somebody close in your circle of friends, correct?
Yeah, it was literally like family.
Yeah.
He always, like, he was the oldest from the kids that were there. And he always, like, since he was the older one, he always, like, was the one that has to be in charge or take care of us because he was the older one. So, like, something that I relate with you is because I had, like, a strong, like, relationship with him. I actually had feelings and, like I appreciated him.
Yeah.
Like
we often do with our friends. We appreciate them. We feel like they're family. We feel like they're an older brother or an older...
Yeah, like an older brother.
Yeah.
And that's one thing, because I'm the only child, and one of my dreams always is, like, to have an older brother. So there was, like, you know, about the manipulation and all of that stuff, like, that connects. Now that I see it, it connects.
Yeah.
And, okay, so everything started, like, I was between 7 or 8 years old. I'm not sure, like, the exact age. But everything started, like, he asked me to go to his room. Like, I remember, like, everything was always, like, black. And the first time, he told me to, like, lay to bed because we're going to play a game, but you shouldn't tell anyone. This is going to be like a secret between you and me, but no one else can know about it because then it can be a problem. I was like, okay, I remember I just lay in bed and that's it.
Like, so it was a game. He said, we're going to play a game. We're going to play the game in the dark. Turned out the light.
Yeah.
And so you lay down on the bed thinking we're going to play a game.
He never turned on the light. It was always like dark. So he like started like touching me like down there on my private part.
Mm-hmm.
And he I don't remember if it was one or two times. I think it was one. Like it was on a different day. And he uses like, you know, like a massager, like, well, that object one time. And the rest of it was all touching.
So touching and fondling mostly with his own hands, but sometimes he'd use another object once or twice. Remember that?
Yeah.
And how long did it go on for?
It was like three times, yeah.
Okay. And so those traumatic events that happened and you not knowing and... You also mentioned in one of the messages that you sent me that you didn't think it was fun and you didn't know that it was abuse because you weren't raped and you had heard some of those words as you got a little older.
What I always heard about was rape, which means penetration. And I was like, oh, okay, like it sounds something familiar to what happened to me, but like... I used to see it like, oh, it's not a big deal because it wasn't penetration. Like, it's not the same. And I never heard something about, like, just touching or messaging or that stuff, just penetration, and that's it. And that's why I was like, okay, I mean.
So what did that mean in your mind and in the way you lived your life when you went, well, that wasn't rape, so it wasn't a big deal? What did that mean? By thinking that and moving forward in your life, how did that affect you?
I always like try to block it. Like when I start thinking about it, I was like, okay, no, I'm just imagined it. Or I don't know, let's just block it because it was when I was little, it already happened. So let's keep going.
So we just keep going, block it out.
Yeah.
It wasn't penetration. It's not a big deal. I'm just going to block it out and keep going. And how did that work out for you?
Well, okay, so it was a before and after. Okay, so before going to therapy, I always, like, there was a time that I was, like, very depressed. Like, I always felt, like, so anxious, like, in my way to avoid that was just going to parties and to drink all the time. All I wanted to do was drink. So I could like forget about everything and just have fun. So during that time, one of my friends like told me one day we were on the bus and he was like, oh, you know, like today on class, I heard a speech where one of my friend was talking about how she was raped.
Mm-hmm.
And when he said that, I was like freeze and let him to keep talking. But in my mind, I was like, wow, like how could she just like in front of everyone of her peers talking about that? Like how I can even like say it to myself. And I know it wasn't like rape, like through penetration, but like, I know it had affected me. And after that, like, everything came out, like, on my mind. And I couldn't block it anymore. So I remember that day, like, I froze. And he asked me, like, I know I had, like, watery eyes. And he asked me, like, have you gone through something like that? And I was like, yes. Like, that was, like, the first time I actually, like, talk about it, like, with details. And that was the first time I unblocked everything. And since that day, I couldn't block it again. So every time was like thinking about it. And like, I need to tell my parents, but then how, like, I couldn't imagine like just telling them because I couldn't like see their faces. So I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. And one day I like had like an impulse. Like an instinct that tells me like record a video telling your story, and I just did it, but I kept it like for 1 or 2 weeks because I couldn't Like, I wasn't brave enough at that point. But then one day, like, I just did it.
And you sent it?
Yeah, on Instagram. I posted on Instagram. I was actually with a friend. I wasn't in my house. I was at that friend's house. And it was like 3 in the morning. And I just did it.
The Jan Broberg Show is proudly sponsored by the Jan Broberg Foundation, where our mission is to make the world a better place by working to eliminate sexual violence against children. We promote healing through community with our online peer-to-peer support group, Thrivivers. We fight for change in public policy that supports survivors and holds perpetrators accountable. And we educate to prevent childhood sexual abuse by hosting guests on our podcast who understand trauma and how it affects our physical, emotional, and mental health. At the Jan Broberg Foundation, we see you, we hear you, and we believe you. You can learn more about the Jan Broberg Foundation by visiting our website at thejanbrobergfoundation.org. Have you ever thought how wonderful it would be to feel seen, heard, and always believed? Well, for less than a dollar a day, we offer an amazing online peer-to-peer support group called Thrivivers. It gives us a safe space for adult survivors of child sexual abuse to get encouragement from each other through sharing their challenges and breakthroughs and going to workshops led by mental health professionals and trauma-informed specialists. Recently, our Thrivivers community had a retreat where we processed our trauma and set goals for healing and growth. Thrivivers.com is brought to you by the Jan Broberg Foundation. Be seen, heard, and believed.
So, you had a friend there. So there was a little bit of a support, like, go ahead and post it. And how did that affect your relationships or your family? Because it sounds to me like you had not shared your story with your family, that you posted it right on Instagram. And then did they find it? Did they see it? What happened next?
Yeah, I posted it because I was like, okay, they're probably safe. They will see it tomorrow, but like not right now. Then a call from my dad. I was like, what? Oh my God. Like, I was so nervous. Like a lot of emotions. And he called me and he just like told me, I just saw the video that you post. I'm going to pick you up. And I was like, oh my God. I was so nervous, and I was with my friend, and I told her, like, you need to come with me. Like, I need you here. Then we went through my house, and he was like, he was so nervous. Like, he didn't even talk about the video. He was just asking random questions. Like, it was really weird. Then when I get home, my mom was in the house, and she was so devastated. Oh, my God. Like, so devastated. Like, she was crying. And that's what I didn't want it to see. Like, that's why I didn't want them to tell them, because I know how hard it was going to be for them. And I know they were going to feel like guilty, and I didn't want. So, like, she started to ask me, like, was it? Who was it? And I was like, I didn't want it to tell her who was it, because like I say, they were like a really close family to us. So it was hard. It was hard like to accept it, to actually know that I was talking with my mom about it. Like, it was, I don't know, there was a lot of emotion. And she told me like she thought like our family was like in here, like everything beautiful. And after that video, like everything collapsed, because she thought like she did everything wrong. And I was like, no, like, it's not your fault, it's not my fault. But yeah, it was a really hard day. And that night, oh no, the next night, I slept with them, and my mom like was hugging me through the night, and like I felt like it wasn't my mom hugging my inner child. And that was actually, it was actually nice. It was actually like so beautiful, because I was just imagining like my inner child hugging my mom on the day everything happened, like what that child needed on that day when everything was happening. So then we start talking about to going to therapy. I started going to therapy. It's still a hard process, but it actually helped me heal. Like when I started to go to therapy and accept like everything that was going on, because I actually was feeling everything that I needed to feel during those times.
I find that to be so interesting and so sweet, and so my own emotions are, you know, a mother's heart, you know, listening to you talk about, you know, your dad coming immediately to get you, your mom holding you in bed close to her, like you were just that little girl again, and how important it was for you to have those experiences so that your little person, your little, as I call most people's inner child, the little in you, the little could feel the love, the safety that she was craving and needed and didn't have then. But by doing that and entering into the emotions of what you were feeling then, you really entered those emotions. Whether you knew this was going to be the way it would go or not, you were there. You were actually that little girl, that little 8-year-old girl getting what you needed. In some ways, you were rewriting your story in those moments. You were getting the needs met. The needs that that little girl needed, they were met. And you got to have that done with your actual parents. I do know that also that fear of telling your story because of the devastation that your mother felt. I'm sure your father felt it too. And the guilt that parents feel when they don't know and they think everything is perfect about their family and about their friends and their neighbors and their congregants and their school teachers. And it's always someone that the child knows. And this was just a young person as well. This was someone who was 5-6 years older than you, I think you said. So something had probably happened to that young person, but that doesn't mean it didn't have the same effect that trauma has.
I always remember one time that he told me he told me to help him do something, and I didn't want to. And he told me, like, if you don't help me, we're going to play the game that you don't like. And that's when I realized that he knew, like, what he was doing. And, yeah.
Because he framed it in that way. We're going to play the game that you don't like. So something about the 7-8-year-old who never had the words, never had probably talked about any of these kinds of things with mom and dad, and not because parents aren't well-meaning, just things look safe. They have their community. It's always somebody that you already trust, that you already know, almost always. I mean, there are a few stranger things that happen, and certainly the online predators, they're strangers to begin with, but then they form relationships and then they meet up, you know, and then they do terrible things and kids are trafficked. There are strangers who then start grooming through manipulation, and then coercion is what happened eventually, because he said, if you don't do this, we're going to play the game that you don't like. So he did know, at least he knew better. But as we talk about these things with our families and we open up to our families, and that was such a very sweet response. We also, like we started out on this conversation, encouraging parents to try not to be devastated, to be concerned and empathetic and listening. But when it becomes your devastation, it takes the focus away from the victim. It's their experience that we are now trying to support them through. And we can have those feelings. I definitely, you know, as a mother, sometimes I have felt those feelings of being devastated. But when I'm trying to help, you know, whether it was my stepdaughters or my son, or something through a hard time, I can't make it about me being devastated. I have to help them. And they need to know that they're safe, that they don't have to worry about my emotions as well as their own healing.
Yeah,
so I
totally.
Think that's really an important message that doesn't get talked about hardly ever. So you've really brought it to the forefront. And the things that your parents did right to come immediately for your father to be there to pick you up, even though you were kind of scared and you're like, he's asking me all these questions that have nothing to do with what I just posted on Instagram and told the whole world about, you know?
Yeah.
But he was there. He didn't know what to say. He didn't know how to ask you those questions.
He was there.
He was there.
Yeah.
And I think that's such an important piece too, that
yes,
oftentimes
it is.
Parents don't know what to do, but we're there. Yeah. If we just show up, that's a big deal.
Yeah, they were really, they have been there since that day.
Yeah.
Through all my process. And I also remember, this is like another like core memory, because one day after therapy, I was in the car, like just looking through the window, thinking about everything I just stuck on therapy. And I was just like crying. And he just told me like, let's go get ice cream. And he drove me, and we were the three of us just eating ice cream. Like, he didn't say anything, just took me to eat ice. And that was everything I needed on that moment, to be there with them. Like, it was really nice too.
Their little girl, that little 8-year-old, she liked ice cream, and she knew that that meant mom and dad care.
Yeah.
And I can just sit here and I can cry all I want. And they're just here to give me the love they have to give and to go out and have ice cream. And those are the, I think people underestimate how important just those little things can be.
Yeah.
Than having your parents there to do exactly what you needed. Ice cream, hold me, listen, let me cry. These are the kinds of things that actually have helped you to at least begin your healing journey.
My
enough
healing.
That you're in school, that you're going to become a public speaker and an orator, and you're going to talk about this.
Yeah.
So I just think that's so amazing, that description, and very touching. Thank you for sharing that. So you have a name for an organization that you want to start.
Yes.
Mi propio diamante. I know what that stands for. Why don't you tell us what that means in English and why this is what you want an organization someday that you're going to start called Mi Propio Diamante.
Diamante, which means my own diamond, right? Yeah,
my own
diamond. My
own diamond.
Diamond.
Yes.
Yes.
Like a diamond ring.
After like doing all this process, I started like seeing me like a diamond, like so precious, like beautiful, but like mostly like valuable. So like, since the diamond is like so delicate, like you need to take care of it, like with love. So that's how I see myself and everyone that had been through something like this, because we need to like take care of us, like to heal and have like a light heart without the guilt, without all that was like a, how do you say it?
You want to get rid of the guilt. And a diamond is such an interesting way to think about it, because it's all those tiny little cuts, those tiny little facets, you know, all those small little pieces. And that's how our human spirits are. They're very intricate.
Yeah.
And so to have each little piece cut and shined and to come through like a brilliant, beautiful diamond. I love the name. The Jan Broberg Show is proudly sponsored by the Jan Broberg Foundation, where our mission is to make the world a better place by working to eliminate sexual violence against children. We promote healing through community with our online peer-to-peer support group, Thrivivers. We fight for change in public policy that supports survivors and holds perpetrators accountable. And we educate to prevent childhood sexual abuse by hosting guests on our podcast who understand trauma and how it affects our physical, emotional, and mental health. At the Jan Broberg Foundation, we see you. We hear you. And we believe you. You can learn more about the Jan Broberg Foundation by visiting our website at thejanbrobergfoundation.org. Have you ever thought how wonderful it would be to feel seen, heard, and always believed? Well, for less than a dollar a day, we offer an amazing online peer-to-peer support group called Thrivivers. It gives us a safe space for adult survivors of child sexual abuse to get encouragement from each other through sharing their challenges and breakthroughs and going to workshops led by mental health professionals and trauma-informed specialists. Recently, our Thrivivers community had a retreat where we processed our trauma and set goals for healing and growth. Thrivivers.com is brought to you by the Jan Broberg Foundation. Be seen, heard, and believed.
Also, I want to say a phrase I wrote to my propio diamante, which says, even though they invaded the most precious, your body and your soul, they couldn't steal your essence. Because through that, I imagine they did invade us, our most precious thing, but they couldn't steal that essence of us. We're still here. We're fighting for it. We're literally warriors. We're here.
I agree. I think we are warriors. I think we have survived something that is so so challenging, and yet our essence shines through, and we just have to keep shining and cutting away and getting down that path like you have. That's a beautiful way to back up the name of your organization. I love that. To me, you kind of outlined the 1, 2, 3, the steps that I feel are kind of similar to me. Tell the story to someone. And for me, it was just a paper in my English class, but it was coming out, right? Out in detail. And then having my parents respond in the way that they did. And then the third thing was therapy, that you started with a therapist.
I went to her when I was little. So we remember about her and we went to her. But actually, what has actually helped me a lot is God. In my case, was God. Because actually she was one of, she was the one that always told me, the only one who's going to heal and help you heal and forgive, it's going to be God, no one else. And at first I was I don't know, because of course at first I was but why me, God? Why me? I don't understand. Then I started understand that maybe I have a purpose, which is this one, to help and educate others through my testimony. So I remember when I was on that process, I realized that I was the parties and the drinking was everything, trying to fulfill those empty spaces. So I started to isolate and distance from those environments. And one time, one of my friends invited me to a church group that was in her house. And it was amazing. That changed my life. I started to have a different perspective in a new mindset. And it was beautiful, to start that relationship with God. Because now I know I have a purpose. He put it on my heart. He's using my voice and my testimony to help others that have been through the same situation or similar.
Yeah, and I think that if we have something that is, that we can believe in something that's bigger than our experience, a bigger picture. When you have purpose and you feel like you're being guided, that is a wonderful way to be able to, like you said, have a purpose. And you also mentioned something about forgiveness. And I have a very, it's very hard to do. And sometimes I think people take that word wrong. It doesn't mean that the perpetrator should not be held accountable. We have to remove access to other children. They need to go to spend their time, in jail or in prison. And hopefully there's therapy for them as well. I can hope for those things. But some of these perpetrators are just truly not, they're not going to get better. It's like an addiction. Forgiveness is a tricky word. And And it is for people because I have been able to let go of him.
Exactly. It's more about letting go like what he did to us.
Yes.
Because in my case, it was like just giving that to God and put it in his hands, like to him take care of that person and me just keep going without that on my heart.
Right. So your heart isn't in prison. Your emotions and feelings aren't being controlled by those experiences. By that person. Yeah. That's a beautiful way to say it. And I really understand that. So in your volunteer work with the victim services, have you been able to, you know, personally talk to various victims, or what kind of things do you do there?
What I do two things: outreach and taking care of the kids, which is my favorite part. I love kids. I always want to like protect them. So I love them. So what I do is while their moms are on therapy, I take care of them, which is very important because if I'm not there, probably their moms won't go to a therapy session. So that's why I always like try to be there, because I know I want them to go to their therapy and the healing process. So I know it's like a really important role in there.
You know, that brings up such an important, also an important thing that we have to remember when, you know, the 8-year-old was abused and then the aftermath comes later. And so a lot of the problems that we have in life come later. They come way later than when the abuse happened. So when you have a child or children, it makes that even more complicated because you're trying to take care of them and you have to take care of yourself, because if you don't, things aren't going to go well. And yeah, you can't. And it might be passed on. That trauma could go to the next generation, not because you are abusing them in the same way, but just because trauma lives in your body, and your body and what lives in you can be passed to your children. So I think that is such a huge part of it, is making sure that parents who are in that process of, I need a therapist, I'm losing my mind, I'm crying all the time, I can't get out of bed, I can't work, my kids are suffering, I'm suffering. We have to remember that we have to help take care of kids too, so they can have their therapies. I think that's amazing. I love that. So what are your plans for the future?
I want to be a motivational speaker, like to talk about not just my story, but others' stories, and mostly educate people about what is this and how to prevent it. And like to talk, like to start a conversation for like more transparent. Because I know it's hard. I know it's a hard and weird thing to talk about. Like sometimes people get really uncomfortable. But that's the thing, like to broke that barrier, like to not make it like that uncomfortable and actually talk about it.
Yeah. And I also think it's very important the way that you do that. And I know that you've talked about maybe writing a book, you know, about your story, or a book like this, even to how would you write a book for young people, for a parent to read a bedtime story to their children? You know what I mean? And start a conversation. Yeah. Because I think it's important to remember that if you're underage, you can't consent. You don't have the mental capacity, the understanding to consent, because you can be manipulated and groomed. So I really like that you want to gear something for parents to use to tell and talk to their kids, because it is a tricky conversation. You don't want to scare them to death, and yet you want them to know. So I'd love to read your book when you have it written.
Thank you.
I think that's terrific. So a great shout out to your parents and your family about how they did so many things right, and how other parents could follow in their footsteps, and that you have done so many things right at such a young age. So when you start that organization, I want you to let me know, because I want to partner and make sure that we have peer-to-peer support groups, and we have them in all languages, in Spanish as well as English. And is there anything else in your healing process that we didn't that you didn't mention that we missed?
I think I have mentioned everything, but I really want to say and remind people how important it is to actually talk about it, because it's the only way that we are going to heal. And it's it's always going to be there, but now we have the tools to manage it and to live the life we deserve.
Exactly. Mic drop. That's perfect. And I believe that in conversation is where we start to unlock and unzip our mouths and our vocal cords. And when our voices are heard, people know and they begin to understand how often people are silenced and how often this kind of abuse happens. And then they start to go, okay, what are we going to do about it? Yeah.
Yeah. Also, what I said first, that there's a lot of type of sexual violence and everyone is still equal. Your story matters. It's not more or less. It's still equal. It's still a trauma that you need to heal.
Right. That's absolutely true. One thing that you mentioned in your story that we didn't touch on is that one time you had a friend, another girlfriend that was with you at this friend's home, wherever this was happening, and he had that person wait outside the door. You told me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that one time I was with a friend, I invited her to my house and we went to the other house where he lived. And we entered and he just grabbed me and told me to go to his room and just told her you stay here. And I was so nervous, but because I knew what was going to happen, but I was she's outside. I don't want her to be part of this. I don't want her to feel like what I'm feeling right now. And I know she's going to have questions. And if she asks me something in front of my parents or something, there was a lot of overthinking on that time, but he just I think that one time was when he told me if you don't help me, we're gonna play the game that you don't like, which I was so nervous because it was that and my friend was outside. So I was I didn't know what to do. But then I'm not sure if it happened or not, but then when I went outside, she started questioning me, you and him look like he's your boyfriend. Why is he telling you to go to his room alone? Were you kissing or something like that? I was no. Then I just said no and keep playing with her.
And again, you're 8 years old. You're little, and so it is really, I can see how he was emboldened. He was, thinking that no matter what, he wasn't going to get caught, or that that he had control over you, over her, and could tell you what to do. And that that this kind of abuse is also emotional and mental. You know, those are things that are also happening to you at the same time that the physical and sexual parts are happening. So I think it's important for people to know that there are many kinds of abuse, and the ways that it is perpetrated upon someone can be very, very different. But the trauma and the outcome are the things that we're talking about, and how do we heal? And that's another example of using sexual violence. He used violence essentially to control you and to control your friend.
There was another time, but he wasn't there. I was at school and I had two other friends and we were just talking, and one of them said do you guys know there's a different type of sexual, to have sex? And she started to talk, one of his uncle told her that, and she was touching her, but she was saying it so normal. And now, today, now I realize that what was happening to me was happening to her, because I remember when she was telling us that, I was in my head wait, she's telling me that her uncle is doing to her what he is doing to me. Then that day, I also felt okay, then it's normal, because they were talking, they were the same age as me, And I was like, okay, she doesn't look like worried or something. I think it's normal. Then I realized like she was happening through the same thing as me.
So, right.
Yeah. And if I knew something like about abuse, I would have said something like, no, that's wrong. Like what your uncle is doing to you is wrong. And if that other friend will have known something about it, she will have said something too. But we neither of us said anything about it because we were too young. We didn't know what was happening. So it was like normal. So yeah, that's another thing.
Well, I appreciate all of the points that you've brought up today. You are certainly the right person to get a scholarship. I'm so proud of you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you
for having me. Yo espero que su día es muy bonita y que su vida tiene todas las cosas que quieren. Gracias por estar aquí.
Gracias. Gracias a ti.
Thank you.
Really admire you. Thank you for everything you do.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you for sharing this journey with me today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please take a couple of minutes to rate and review the show. This really helps us spread the word. And if you know someone who would benefit from listening to our show, please do me a favor and share one of our episodes with them. I want every survivor to know that they are not alone and that there is help available. Links to my website, our foundation, the new book, our online community, Thrivivors, and newsletter can be found in the show notes. All of my contact info is there as well. This year, my number one focus is on sharing our stories. This is so important because it's the launching pad to our healing journey, and it inspires the survivor who is still suffering in silence. I don't want anyone to suffer alone anymore. So please reach out. I want to hear from you. Until next time, my friends, this is Mama Jan signing off. Over and out on 2.